Hello, my finest friends. Welcome to my podcast feed, powered by Acast Plus. Here's a joke from my son. What did the bum say to the other bum? That's a bummer. You know, not for everyone. Look, thanks to everyone who's come to see the previews of Can I Have My Ball Back? It's been going really, really well, and I'm really pleased with how the show's turning out. It's officially on tour now from Wednesday. I'll be at the Leicester Square Theatre. A couple of tickets left. Lots of press coming to that one. It'd be lovely to sell out, but there are a few other London gigs not selling as well. So if you're going to come to London, maybe look up those other London gigs. And then this week I'll be in St Albans on Thursday, Gloucester on Friday, Chorley on Saturday, which is sold out, but you can join the waiting list, and Glasgow on Sunday. Two shows. I think the earlier show is sold out. Check with the venue, but the later show has some availability. Come along if you can. If you enjoy these podcasts and like them being free, then the great way to pay me back is to buy a ticket to a show or buy a download or a book from gofasterstripe.com. But you can just keep listening for free as well. That pays me back also. So, you know, no pressure. But I'd love to see you there. If you just know me from the podcast and don't know me as a stand-up, I'm pretty good as a stand-up. It's a good show. I think you're going to enjoy it. It's only made about seven men faint so far. So, you know, are you brave enough to take the challenge? Let's sit back, relax, and enjoy whichever podcast you're listening to now.
When you're ready to pop the question, the last thing you want to do is second-guess the ring. At BlueNile.com, you can design a one-of-a-kind ring with the ease and convenience of shopping online. Choose your diamond and setting. When you find the one, you'll get it delivered right to your door. Go to BlueNile.com and use promo code LISTEN to get $50 off your purchase of $500 or more. That's code LISTEN at BlueNile.com for $50 off your purchase. BlueNile.com, code LISTEN.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems. But getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Ladies and gentlemen, welcome to the Leicester Square Theatre. Please welcome a man who is about to perform to a room full of orphans. It's Richard Herring. That is called improvisation, my friend, my fan friends. And all the people at home are going, what's going on? I don't understand. That's what's happening. That's how they're speaking. So, welcome to the show. What's going on, Rich? That's what my audience are like. Welcome to Rich Herring's Leicester Square Theatre Podcast. I was hanging around with B asterisk Witched the other day. You know, Adele, Keevy, Lindsay and Sinead. Shane from The Boys Own was trying to get in, but we said, you're not allowed in here, mate. This is just for cool people. And that's he's the brother of the twins. Come on, get with it. They call it Rahalastapar. That's how they call it, Rahalastapar. Got married, they're Scottish, I don't know if you know that. So, we'll crack straight on, or nearly straight away. I was just, the nicest thing that's happened to me this week, it's sort of a weird thing. I saw the most joyful performance of ending I've seen. Is my daughter started to like to have music played after the bath at night time. So she got out of the bath and then was in her bedroom and naked, and All You Need Is Love came on, and she did a sort of interpretive dance. All You Need Is Love, which is kind of weird, you know, a grown man watching a three-year-old. She did like a little breakdance section in the middle. I've never seen a naked breakdance before, but it's something amazing. But I particularly liked it because when I tried to join in with the All You Need Is Love chorus and sung along, she went, no, Danny, shut up! Which I don't think was really in the spirit of the piece. So look, we're going to... It's just turned into me talking about my daughter. That's what it's going to be for the rest, for the next 15 years. And then, you know, there'll be the awful teenage years. Imagine if the podcast is still going on then. Oh, my God.
I just hope I die. I hope I die. So we can get out of this. So anyway, our guest this week is probably, weirdly enough, probably best known for doing a dance herself in front of Ryland from The X Factor on the TV show Up Late with Ryland. That's why we're here to see. Will you please welcome Sophie Willan, ladies and gentlemen? Thank you very much. Come in. Sit down. There's a microphone under your bottom. You have to pick it up. There we go. Hello. There we go. How are you doing?
I'm all right. How are you?
I'm very good. You're very glamorous.
Am I?
Yeah,
I just
look at this.
Put loads of makeup on in the dressing room. That was just to compensate for the wine I drank before the makeup.
Yeah. Was that today or yesterday? I'm still...
Probably both.
I'm still recovering from Friday night. As you get older, drinking gets worse. I had two drinks when I did a pub quiz, and look at me now. That was beautiful once. I saw you do this. I didn't know what it was called from the YouTube clip, but I've managed to locate the show, Up Late with Ryland.
Yeah.
You've done quite a few episodes of Up Late
with
Ryland.
That was my fine hour, that. Yeah. Up Late with Ryland. Shall I show you the moves?
Yeah, I'd love to see them, yeah.
Well, thank you. I've got a fan. Lovely. Did you see it? Up Late with Ryland. I'll show you the moves. Thank you very much. What's your name?
Kirsten,
this is just for you. Lovely. The first move is... But this is lovely, isn't it? You come on a nice podcast and before you know it, your tits shout shaking at a crowd. It's lovely. So basically, the tit shake is the first move. And the key with the tit shake, Richard, do you want to try it?
I think I probably can do it.
Yeah. The thing is, you know, what you've got to do is just suddenly imagine you've suddenly grown breasts.
Yes.
Well, you don't have to imagine that much. Yeah. But... imagine you've suddenly grown breasts, you're terrified and you're desperately trying to shake them off your body.
Yeah.
Right, so you go... In the breasts, Richard, that's it. Yeah, that's...
Yeah, it's going down to my stomach.
It's going in
reason.
Your hips. It's getting very gutty with you, isn't it?
Yeah.
It's still nice, though.
Yeah, it's good, thank you.
The second one is the wiggle, right? Now, the thing with the wiggle is you've just got to imagine, because people say they get very frightened, they go in too fast. Don't.
Okay.
Actually, because I know you're tempted. I can see it in your eyes. But... it's dangerous, because my grandma had a partial prolapse from this, so you've got to be very careful. What you've got to do is just imagine your hips are trapped in a box, Richard, right? And just hit every corner of the box, right? That's absolutely perfect, Richard. You're very, very sensual. What a sensual man. It's all coming out now, isn't it?
I remember.
Right? Now what you've got to do...
Try doing this to Enya, that's my problem.
Yeah. You can take this home for your wife tonight, right? Now, what you've got to do, Richard, is imagine... Now, when you've got every corner of the box, you want to make a circle. What do you do, Richard? Polyfiller in, polyfiller in, polyfiller in. That's perfect. Very sexy.
Thank
Last
you.
One, the twerk. I didn't think this is how the evening would go. Did you? This last one is the twerk. Now, everybody thinks with the twerk it's in the arse. It's actually not. It's in the balls of your feet, Kirsten, right? It is. What you've got to do, Richard, keep your feet... the balls of your feet got to stay glued to the floor.
Okay.
No matter how much you want this moment to end, which we all do, right, you can't get away.
Yeah.
So you try and run away, but your balls of your feet stay... No, what is this? Just... It's not the okey-cokey. Just come on. So you've got to try and run away. But just imagine, Richard... As it's happening, you're being electrically charged through the vagina, right?
I can imagine that.
So it's going through the vagina, Richard, through the vagina, and then you're trying to run away.
Yeah, you're better than me.
There you go.
Thank you very much. Oh, quite tired now.
Oh. Very good.
Who do you enjoy? Ryland didn't join in when you did.
No, he didn't. You did.
I did.
Yes.
Yeah.
I saw a weak prey.
So, well, just in case there's people at home who are not...
You look knackered, do you want a second?
I'm very tired. God, you don't know how difficult it is. I love the way you say this is something to take home to your wife. I've got two children, I haven't had sex for 10 years. So it's a... and I've got two children, they're both... the oldest one's three, so that's... that's the worrying thing. Feels like 10 years. No, it's, again, it's a lie, darling. It's a lie. We make love all the time. So, and I'm amazed. Too much information. Cut that out.
But you've got your new moves now.
I do, so yes, so it's going to be fine. I'm going to wake her up. She's going to be delighted. I'm going to wake her up when I get home tonight. She's going, oh, thank you, darling. Thank you for waking me up. We're very tired. We're both very tired. You're pretty new to stand-up comedy, but you've been doing quite a lot of theatre stuff before you got into stand-up comedy.
Yeah, it was kind of funny, but by accident. It wasn't, yeah, a choice. But to sort of theatre, live art, cabaret, and then it went accidentally into sort of stand-up comedy. Really.
How did that accident occur?
Well, I started dressing up as a cat for a really long period of time, and it wasn't very serious.
Right.
But it was meant to be. I don't know what happened. And then I set up a cabaret collective for a few years.
Yeah.
Then we did sort of arts council-funded projects and different things, and then eventually I got in touch with the BBC producer. I mean, I stood outside the Media City building and flyered every producer.
Right.
Until one of them agreed to come to my show. I think they thought it was sort of a hostage. So they came to the show, and then one of them said, why don't you try stand-up? So that's how it happened, really.
So
so it's quite new.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Well, so 2014, was that the first show? Yeah.
Well, that was a theatre solo show. And then my first stand-up show was 2016.
Right, OK. And so you've been winning. You won you got nominated for Best Newcomer in Edinburgh.
Chortle, that was the Best Chortle. Newcomer, yeah.
And you've won this, the first recipient of this Carolina Hearn bursary.
Yeah, and so then the Edinburgh Comedy Award last year, but it was different show. Okay. Yeah.
Right, yeah, that's right.
So it's showing off now.
Yeah, but that's happening very fast.
Yeah.
Which is great.
It has happened fast. Yeah. Yeah, but then also a long time because the theatre and the solo shows I was doing for ages and the writing, it was all kind of tapped into this.
Sure.
Just slightly different. Yeah.
Sure. And so you're from Bolton.
Mm-hmm.
I just picked it up. I'm like Henry Higgins. And I've read that you first got into drama when you were on holiday in Ibiza with your gran. Is that right? And that you went to the hotel comedy club?
Yes.
That theatre club?
Yeah, my grandma. I went to live with my grandma when I was about 8 years old. And she'd just got divorced at this point, so she was having quite a renaissance. And she just discovered nightclubs, feminism and zebra print, so she was having a fucking whale. But I mean feminism in a very, you know, 90s way. Like, she joined Anne Summers and said cock a lot, so it's very... Anyway, we went to Ibiza because she wanted to see Enigma perform live in the Café Del Mar.
Enigma? Remind me who Enigma were.
We don't need another dance demonstration. But they did like sort of dance music, you know, very do, and they had sort of weird primal sex noises just sort of thrown in.
Okay.
You're nodding quite intensely, did you?
Yeah.
Were you there? You remember it? Yeah, you know, do, ow! You know, it's very sudden and it really gets... You've got to be quite careful when you dance to it.
Yeah.
Because Grandma had a partial prolapse, like I say, through that, so you've got to be... So anyway, we went to see them in Ibiza.
Yeah.
And then I joined the Hotel Drama Club and I got my first role as the crying clown. And I performed to about... I think it was sort of four pissed, sunburnt couples. But it felt like an arena. It did. And then I just had the bug after that, so I started performing and writing, and I loved it.
It seems like a hotel in Ibiza having a theatre club seems like quite surprising. I've never been to a hotel with a theatre
I think it's
club.
Just a drama. They just gave you a wig and told you to go on. You know, it's just... But it felt, you know, like the Royal Theatre. You know, it's fabulous.
It's once you're bitten by the bug. You have, you know, like our last week's guest, you've got quite a confessional style to your comedy, and you talk a lot about your family as well, and your family is quite... quite an unusual upbringing, I guess, in lots of ways.
I suppose so. Yeah.
So you were your mum's is a drug addict.
Yes, like
a heroin
unfortunately.
Addict. Yeah.
Yeah, but we are relieved she picked drugs because she was a terrible mother. So it's it is a relief. Honestly, she's not very good at it, Richard. What's your mum like?
Well, she's probably not ever had heroin.
No.
Barbara Heron, I'm guessing.
That's a start, isn't it?
Yeah. I don't think she's ever taken a drug of any kind.
No.
She's a very different lady, I would say.
Yeah, my mum's fabulous. She just wasn't good at the mum stuff.
Yeah.
Like, she once tried to cook me breakfast and it was an absolute disaster. She tried to boil me an egg, actually. It was a very simple task. It was the most stressful experience of my life. She just stood staring at the pan for 20 minutes, just going, how do you know if it's cooked? It looks the fucking same! It's very stressful. You know. She's constantly stored under my phone as Mum, not an emergency contact.
So, you grew up in care, is that right?
I grew up in and out of foster care. So, yeah, so I'd lived with my mum, and then I went into sort of temporary foster care, and then I went to live with foster parents. I actually lived on a farm with a couple called Auntie Dot and Uncle Harold, who were not actually my aunt and uncle, but the government liked to trick you into thinking you're related. So... So if you're not confused enough. And then after that, I went to live with my grandmother. Yeah. And then at 15, I went back into supported housing. So kind of in and out, I suppose.
Yeah. Okay. And so you've used those experiences quite a lot in your... Because you do comedy and theatre, and you also do you do stuff within the care community as well, yeah?
Well, so I sort of started out... when I was about 20, I started out doing theatre. And then I kind of got into producing...
Yeah,
because I work with a theatre in Manchester called Contact Theatre, who were all about making sure that as artists or performers or writers that you were self-produced artists, writers and performers, and your kind of political drive was at the root of everything. So that was the mentoring that I was given, really.
Yeah.
And then from that, it was, you know, it's about how do you produce your own projects. I produced a lot of projects that were around creating, you know, kind of artistically engaged social projects in certain areas. So I did a lot with sort of racial conflicts in Bolton.
Yeah.
And then that kind of moved on. And then I started working with kids in care a little bit outside of that. And then in 2015, I set up my own project called Sophie Willan's Stories of Care, that was kind of a multi-platform project with, I think, 12 partners. And we raised £150,000 to kind of...
Brilliant.
Oh, no, 110,000. I've added on an extra 40, but fucking no, isn't it? £110,000 to kind of... It was all about redressing the balance, really, between the kind of negative, you know, representation of care leavers and, you know, mental health users and social service users and welfare recipients that seemed to get worse and worse from 2007 onwards.
Yes.
Which really pissed me off, actually.
Well, there's a lot of, you know, those sort of Channel 4... Well, they were scroungers, sort of.
Yeah,
programmed.
Benefit Street, yeah. Bring Back the Borstal, Loose Women, you know, all these cunty shows. I just got so angry, and I just thought I couldn't see anybody representing my people here, and it wasn't positive when they were represented. And I thought there needs to be a balance, and now it's getting a bit more in the kind of zeitgeist, that conversation again, which is great. But at the time, it wasn't, and it was really irritating.
Well, but it's interesting that you've got up and done that yourself. A lot of people say, oh, you know, actors, theatre's full of people from Eton.
Well, when I say theatre, it was basically a youth club in Manchester, so it wasn't... It's kind of in between theatre and, you know, it kind of was a place that had live art and cabaret and theatre and lots of different... And it was all about being a self-produced artist, so not like a sort of... actor, I suppose. You wrote yourself, you produced yourself, you set up your own companies and...
Yeah, but it's the creative, you know, like I think a lot of people think, oh, those avenues aren't open to me, and understandably, because it's harder and harder.
They're not, are they? No, really? They aren't.
You know, but then if you create your own, you know, it's exactly the same. People say, oh, how do I get started in comedy? How do I get started in writing?
But I wanted to be like Juliet in Romeo and Juliet. You know, instead I'm doing stand-up comedy. I mean, that's... You find your avenue, don't you? But it's usually the fucking cleaner... In Pride and Prejudice, when you've got the Northern accent, you know.
Yeah.
So you find whatever in you, and you just got to go with where your natural, where people will naturally place you, I suppose, at first.
Yeah, it was tricky. But so, I mean, you felt that there's this sort of, I mean, there obviously is this patronising attitude, and then you got fated as being this working class comedian, even, and, you know, but you felt that was.
Well, so I did a show called On Record that was kind of about getting my records back from social services and kind of reclaiming the negative language around mental health, social services and care leavers. And I focused specifically on three words that were mentioned in my files, rebellious, defiant and rude. Surprisingly came up a lot, I don't know why. And by the end, I sort of reclaimed those words, you know, rebellious as a sign of creativity, defiant as a sign of a strong will, rude, well, I'm just fucking honest, aren't I? And one thing I did as well is looked at my family members, because a lot of them, like Maria's lot, struggle with psychosis. And obviously they did that research recently that proves that successful comedians have more psychotic traits than anybody else in any other profession.
So I think I'd be doing better.
Yeah. So I said, well, that's great for me, isn't it? Because I'm genetically wired to be fucking hilarious, you know? And a lot of the show is about kind of celebrating the attributes that come along with certain taboo mental health issues. Yeah. And then at the end, I did sort of reviews of family members that kind of were called back to the beginning. So Uncle John, who's a schizophrenic who spends most of his time laughing into a packet of port scratchings in Wetherspoons. At the end, you know, did Chortle Says, absurdist comedian Uncle John discusses life and love with a packet of port scratchings. Yeah. You know, so it's kind of a redressing. But after that, a lot of what people said was, oh, working class comedian, oh, brilliant, we've got a northern female working class comedian. Come on, Sophie, quick, grab your clogs and your whip it, let's go. So, yeah, it's...
I mean, it is, you know, the circuit is a very middle class place, I think, the comedy circuit, and you know, and again, especially if you're coming to London, you sort of need to have some. When I came to London, you didn't need any kind of backup plan or any, you know, yeah. I've got on the Enterprise Alliance, I've got a job where I earn £100 a week, yeah. And that was enough to survive on. But the idea of that now would be laughable for anyone coming to London. So if you're trying to make it as a comedian, it is difficult if you're starting with nothing and, you know, and no route through that way. So that's why I think you tend to seem...
And it's, I suppose, it's quite oversaturated there. There's a lot of people, isn't there?
There is, and, you know, and I suppose it's the similar thing with all these aspects where we're talking about whether women and ethnic minorities and everyone are getting involved in the entertainment industry. If the people at the top are all of a certain type of people, which they are from 20 or 30 years ago, it's difficult to break through that barrier.
Yeah, I said that actually recently. It's like the diversity needs to come from the gatekeepers, doesn't it?
Yeah.
Not just kind of tokenistic, oh, quick, we need one of those, you know, grab them quick, you know, because that's not going to work, is it?
No.
If the gatekeepers are more diverse, then they'll authentically pick people that they relate to, because it's all about who you relate to, isn't it?
It is, subjective, to some extent. But, you know, I think also, you know, you can... If you like comedy, you can watch any kind of person doing comedy. You know, I mean, you don't have to be, you know, you have to have grown up in a brothel like Richard Pryor's family to understand why Richard Pryor's
amazing. No, but I suppose that you're more likely to pick stuff that you go, that is the best of that, because you relate to it or you understand it or it's authentic. Whereas if you're trying to find it, you might miss it if you don't know it as authentically. You know, and that's okay, isn't it? Because there's so many different types of people and everybody's voice has a place, doesn't it?
Yeah. Well, that's, you know, but and also you want different stories and you want different voices in stories, you know. It's kind of, and you want different voices on the stand-up, bill.
And from the producer level as well, you want more different voices, don't you? Not just the actual acts themselves.
Yeah, but the danger is, I mean, and I don't think this has happened to you at all, but it's the danger is if people are like looking for the new, we need that. You get grabbed too quickly, you know, you're not ready for that next move up, and then it's sort of. You see, I've seen people where that's happened, where they get taken in, they go, here's your, you know, 15 minutes in a show, or here's your show, and then they haven't got enough experience to...
What do you mean, 15 minutes?
Well, you know, they get picked out, you know, people are looking for new people all the time, right, which is understandable, and then you put them straight on the telly, then they're not ready for that, you know, they haven't done enough of the groundwork in the background, and then it can be a negative thing if you discover too soon, if you see what I mean.
I think you're definitely right, yeah.
Yeah, but I mean, it sounds like you've got a good grounding in having done all this stuff.
I think
in
it's
the past
been
well.
Difficult because even though I've been doing stand up for like 3 years, I've actually been working as a writer for 10, actually, and a producer for 10. So I did theatre, I've done plays, you know, plays ensembles and then solo plays. And then I went into stand up with all that. So that's why my shows are kind of structured.
Yeah.
Hours that have that narrative.
People seem to be going to theatre a lot more, which is, again, interesting. So the TV companies are with Fleabag and Chewing Gum.
Yeah.
These have come kind of from a theatrical background as well.
Which can be positive, can't it? But then also, on the other side, it's good to have, like, you know, I love just straight stand-up power.
Yeah.
You know...
I think it's important to keep, you know, I just think things stagnate every now and again, you know, and I think when I started doing stand-up in the early 90s, the late 80s, you know, it stagnated a bit. The 80s have been really interesting, and then the 90s were quite boring load of blokes doing gags, really.
Yeah.
And I didn't feel, I felt when I came back to doing stand-up in 2004, I kind of fitted more in, because I wasn't like the, it was a lot of laddie, high-status men doing... You know, quite.
Where did you fit in that?
Well, I fit in more in low status, weird, and people doing. Well, I don't quite fit in either world, but you know, there was a lot more weird stuff going on. Again, like imagine the '80s was very yeah. weird, and lots of people who were genuinely crazy. I mean, there is this connection between being slightly crazy and being a comedian.
Yeah,
and you see it with Maria, and then but then obviously with Maria. It had gone. It's not like, oh, it must be great having a mental illness. You must be funny all the time. Because because obviously it's a negative thing.
It's a hard thing to control. Isn't
yeah,
it?
You can't control it by its very nature. So, but it, obviously there is a connection.
I think there is. They say it's because like comedians connect thoughts that are never normally connected in the same way that people with psychosis do. Yeah. So your thoughts are like really. You know, abstract and abstractly connected.
Yeah. With a bit of control, maybe. I mean, that's a bit with the understanding of why those two things
are odd.
Why they're odd together. If you're
like my mum often thinks that Freddie Mercury is speaking to her. He's not. A comedian would know he's not.
Yeah.
My mum has no fucking idea. So that's the.
But, and also, I think a lot of comedy is sort of faking, you know, is pushing things and faking being crazy a little bit as well.
I suppose so playing up to your persona, whatever that is.
Because maybe it goes. I mean, it might go back through history to crazy people. You know, like the courts of the royal families used to be just full of. They'd get crazy people in, partly as entertainment, partly as wise.
In the courts,
you know, in the courts, like in the Russian court, I was talking about it on Netflix, my Rasputin document. But the Russian courts had like a variety of like wise people who were, you know.
So it's like Jerry Springer for.
Well, not court, but like the royal courts where, you know, like jesters rather. So they're like coming in, but like why? What the wise fools and people with epilepsy basically coming in and rolling around on the floor and then someone going, this means you should go to war with Germany, you know. So it's that kind of thing.
God.
Yeah. So there's a connection. There's a connection through history, I think, with all this, but there we go. Luckily, I was more eloquent on Netflix. That boy bloody wasn't. It was cold in that studio. So, what does the Carolina Hearn bursary involve? What do you have to do a certain?
I don't think you have to do anything. Actually, I think you win it, which is good, nice. And then you decide what you're doing afterwards. So, I think what I want to do is hopefully develop a sitcom with it, which I've done lots of different treatments over years and written up. Pilots and different things. So it's nice now to have that with a bit of backing, I suppose.
Sure.
I'm going to do another one and hopefully get it commissioned.
So they've given you some money and that gives you a bit of freedom.
They give you a bit of money and then hopefully maybe a script commission as well. You know, double whammy would be fabulous, wouldn't it? So.
Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds. At Mint Mobile, we like to do the opposite of what Big Wireless does. They charge you a lot. We charge you a little. So naturally, when they announced they'd be raising their prices due to inflation, we decided to deflate our prices due to not hating you. That's right. We're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month. Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month slows. Full terms at mintmobile.com.
One size fits all seems like a good idea for clothes until you try them on. Same goes for healthcare. That's why United Healthcare offers flexible, budget-friendly coverage for medical, vision, dental, and more. Learn more at uh1.com.
Everyone knows therapy is great for solving problems, but getting therapy has its own problems too, like finding the right therapist, fitting into their schedule, and of course, the cost. Well, BetterHelp can solve those problems. It's totally online and built around your schedule. It's surprisingly affordable, too. Connect with a credentialed therapist by phone, video, or online chat, all from the comfort of your home. Visit BetterHelp.com to learn more and save 10% on your first month. That's BetterHelp, H-E-L-P.
Right, I'll ask you some emergency questions.
Oh, right, okay.
See how we go. Going to be different ones. If every time you farted, a fairy died an agonising death, would you stop farting?
If I probably wouldn't. Fuck them.
Fair enough. Have you ever improvised a condom?
I haven't, but I'm intrigued now what you would do. Your instinct is a plastic bag, isn't it? What would you do?
I'm very careful and I would buy prophylactics from the shop.
And have when you have sex every 10 years.
Have them in my wallet until the sell-by date went by. I don't think I would, You can just kiss and stuff, can't you?
Why not?
Yeah. Don't need to go all the way. What is the most, the strangest things you've ever found in the embers of a bonfire?
I don't think I've ever searched a bonfire. What have you been doing with bonfire?
Our first cat I found in the embers of a bonfire.
Did you?
Yeah.
God, that's a psychotic episode I've ever heard, isn't it?
One of my earliest memories.
No, I don't think I've ever found any. I've never looked, actually.
Don't have a look. Next time you're near a bonfire, look in there. I bet you'll find something. I bet if you go back to Bolton, you'll find some good stuff in there.
I'm sure, definitely.
They burn all sorts of stuff up there. If you were going to be put in a human centipede, are you aware of the human centipede franchise?
No.
There's a film called The Human Centipede in which a mad doctor stitches three people together. The first person's mouth is fine, their bottom is stitched to the mouth of the second person, and then their bottom is stitched. I'm sorry to shock you, Sophie.
Yeah, this is. So what? I have to pick three people.
You're in the middle. Who would you like in? You get to choose who would be in front of you and who would be behind.
That's a tricky evening, isn't it?
And it's for life, you know. Your life won't be very long, though, so...
Oh, God, who would I want that with? I feel... David Attenborough.
Yeah, of course. Is he ahead or behind? Are you eating David Attenborough's poo, or are you pooing the poo?
I don't want to eat his shit. I don't know where he's been. He's been all over the world, hasn't he?
Yes.
I think I'd like to hear him narrate what's happening to us. It would be interesting.
Well, that's not really in the question, but I will allow it. I'm going to allow it.
And then who's at the bottom end? I don't know. Cheryl Cole. She doesn't seem like she'd ever shit. So I think that would be...
Okay. So Cheryl Cole on the front, and you're shitting into the mouth of David Attenborough, and he's going...
I'm shitting? I thought it was Cheryl.
No, you're in the middle.
Oh, right, OK.
Well, they're middle. They're both the first and the second person.
I'll have Cheryl and David Attenborough.
That's good. That's a good choice. It's a very good choice. Let me get back to my notes. I won't ask you that. That's for Maria Bamford. So, you worked as a sex worker that you talk about in your set.
Yes.
And so, I'm interested.
Don't let him stumble over that.
I'm interested in a lot of things about this, but I'm interested in the reaction you got from other feminist acts as much as...
What do you mean in this show that talk about it, in general?
Yeah, in general as well. Okay. You talked about this, about helping you get you through this period of creativity by earning some money in that way. But some feminists find that an unacceptable way to behave.
Mm.
Yeah.
Yeah, well, I sat up, because I did a feminist collective in my early 20s, and I set it up with a group of women who, they were lovely. They all had good backgrounds and bedtimes. And, the kind of women who could eat half a Kit Kat and save the other half for later. I really admired them. And, I set this collective up as well because I was really up for it, So I paid for the website, paid for the directors, paid for everything. And I told one of them that was working as an escort, and she said, "Sophie, that's so unfeminist, very judgmental." And it really pissed me off, actually, but not at the time. I was full of shame at the time, It was only afterwards I thought, God, it always becomes a feminist issue, doesn't it, escorting and sex work?
Yeah.
And it's actually the only industry, in this kind of patriarchal world that becomes a feminist issue, actually. We don't go into telesales offices, do we, and go, "Oh, Sue on the phones. Is she empowered? Or is she just selling carpets because she's a middle child?" We don't. You don't. So it annoyed me, And I thought, well, I paid for the website, I paid for the directors, So technically the feminist collective had been seed funded on prostitution. It's the irony. So I sort of wanted to write about that in the show, really, and talk about that judgment, because I do think that, a lot of the conversations around feminism are dominated by women from good backgrounds who set the ideals for everybody based on what's been possible for them. And never does it become a social thing, or a class thing or any of the other things. It's always a feminist issue. So I suppose that's what I wanted to kind of look at, really. Yeah. And also just to go to them, So, yeah.
Was that a hard choice for you to go into that, or was that just, was it a...
What, the escorting?
Yeah, yeah.
I mean, I was really young, so I was like 20, and, you know, you're sort of mental, aren't you, at 20? Not that you get less mental, but slightly, I suppose. Yeah. So I was sort of in denial about it, and I don't think it was sexually empowering, even though at the time I pretended it was, you know?
Yeah.
But it was economically empowering. I mean, it meant that I could, you know, set up these collectives. I could do loads of different things. But it wasn't, I think, an easy thing to do.
No.
And I wouldn't do it now. I don't think I'd be able to do that now. And I've since done loads of therapy, so I don't think I'd be able to do it now. Because you're basically going into rooms and you're performing at people, aren't you?
Yeah.
Which is not a very authentic, healthy thing to do, is it? You know?
Well, it is. Well, I have, you know, Stuart actually used to do a routine about how he thought tongue-in-cheek slightly, but how he thought stand-up comedy and sex work are the same thing. Yeah,
yeah, you're basically going in rooms with strangers going, love me for money, you know. So it is a...
Yeah, at least escort work is more honest than what we're doing here.
Yeah, I suppose.
We all know.
Less damaging, though.
Yeah.
You know, because it is mental, I think, the escorting thing, you know.
Yeah.
You know, it's kind of a weird world, isn't it? But I didn't want to write a whole show on that because I didn't think it should be glorified or, you know, it often gets too much attention. It's either glorified or demonised or, you know, dramatised.
Yeah.
And actually, I think I just wanted to use it as a tool to talk about labelling in general as opposed to...
Did the guys who came to you sort out their parking beforehand or did they...
You'd hope so. I mean, some were taxi drivers. I mean, I don't know what they did. So, you know.
Because I had this experience I was talking about last week in which I was held up at the hotel by a man who wanted to park for cheaply before he went upstairs with an escort, but was trying to...
Yes, I saw that.
Yeah, yeah. So I just wondered whether he was typical. Were they quite penny-pinching, the guys around the
restaurant? It depends, really. I mean, I was quite lucky. They were quite generous.
Yeah.
But, you know, it was before the credit crunch. So, I mean... Things changed, you know.
And do you find the kind of confessional aspect of your work, do you find that liberating? Do you think once you've talked about these things that it sort of frees you up, or does it...
I'd like to think not. I'd like to think you go for therapy first and then you talk about it on stage. Not that it's cathartic in the action.
Yeah. I definitely use it as therapy.
Do you?
Yeah. I don't have much... When I was in my 30s, I think I used a lot of the shows as a way of kind of fighting through things that were bothering me. I've never been for therapy.
Have you not? No. Oh, God, you're doing very well in therapy.
But I always found my shows quite helpful, you know, in the end. Some of them I was, like, really properly depressed while I was doing them.
Oh, that's amazing. I couldn't do that. I tried to write a show about my mum, like, a few years before, and I couldn't do it because I hadn't processed it and... I just felt that I wasn't able to look at it objectively. And I suppose because I like to have a bird's eye view on it and my story just be a kind of tool to talk about other things.
Yeah.
Whereas if you don't know what you think about or feel about something, I don't know if you'd be objective on it. But,
yeah, but I mean, you know, you're working through it as you do. I mean, that was my way of thinking about something, I suppose. I don't think none of my problems have ever been on the level. Like you say, I've come from a nice background where I have loving parents. And,
it's still hard to do, isn't it?
Yeah, no. Yeah, it's hard. But, you know, but you're
maybe that's better, actually, to do it as you go in.
Yeah.
Because you know.
Well, I think you find truths.
Because over the period of shows that you do on tour, you probably discover things.
Yeah.
Whereas I'm like, oh, fucking hell, this again. You know?
I already know. I think like a lot of the truths that come out of comedy that are the serious truths, I think are fairly basic and obvious, but most people don't get a chance to stop and think about them. So like whenever I do a show about something, like the Happy Now is about whether happiness is attainable or whether desirable, really. And if you think about it, you realise, well, actually, if you were happy all the time, that would be really fucking weird. We're not meant to be in a state
constant
of happiness.
State,
because if we were, it wouldn't be meaningless anyway, because you need to be unhappy for happiness to have any meaning. And it's so obvious, but I think with that, if I hadn't sat down to really think through what I was, you know, whether I was content and what that meant...
Yeah.
You know, so you get to, hopefully you're pushing towards, in that subject, you're pushing towards, you know, being less unhappy.
Yeah.
But you need
and working
to,
it out as
yeah, but you need to have had the unhappiness for happiness to mean anything. And you also need to be aware that the happiness is a...
Fleeting.
That it's going to go as well. You know, life goes bad at the end.
This is really uplifting.
But that's it. But so but all these things are interesting, and then they are, you know. But I think that's the what you know. If your job isn't to sit down and think about a subject for 6 months and then do jokes about it, you don't necessarily even just think of these very basic truths. And what I'm saying, I didn't anyway, until I sat down and thought about these things. That didn't really properly strike me, you know. So I think you can work your way through quite complicated ideas and come to a very simple truth. And it's,
I think ideas are different to like emotional trauma. Yeah. I think, you know, you have to have dealt with some of, like, I don't think you can work out your emotional trauma on a tour. On a rural tour, it's only going to get worse, isn't it?
But I think some comics do. I think comics do. It's not like over a few years. I think some comics do. So
probably,
I think comics. And some, you see comedians go through. Well, you know, again, Maria was talking about that, like having that point where she broke down and what she was saying was nonsense. And people said it's time to go to the hospital, basically. But, you know, some comedians, you'll see them go through those moments and think, okay, maybe it's time to go to the hospital. Someone to tell you to stop taking cocaine every night or whatever it is they're doing. But, you know, it's, I think
the worst thing I felt is just like, repeating myself, you know, the things that you've said, you know, 1,000 times, the epiphanies you've had, you know, 68 shows ago, you still say now, and you just think, oh, God, you drive yourself mad with your own story, you know.
It is difficult. I mean, that's a difficult thing. But I think, again, that with experience of doing loads and loads of shows, I got to a point where when I was doing shows 10 or 15 years ago, if you came and saw me halfway through the tour, it wasn't that good. Because I'd got a bit bored of it, and you know, if the audience weren't immediately grabbing it, I was going, "Right, fuck you now, fuck you."
Also got angry.
But now, I'm trying to make it better every time.
Yeah.
And you'd get used to that, I think. But it's.
I think you just feel sometimes a bit. You know, it's like your whole identity thing can get a bit. You wear yourself out with your own identity.
Yeah.
Do you know what I mean? So it's just like.
Yeah. But then it's constant. About. I think it's about finding your. Which I think you seem to have found very quickly. You've founded your centre and your character on stage, which is you. So, like, again, you know...
Quickly-ish, but then when I was in theatre, it was like, we weren't acting, we were doing solo autobiographical stuff. Yeah. And for ages, I was a bit like my gran. And then before that, I was dressing up as a cat, so I was getting everything out that I felt, but with ears on. So, you know, it's like you have different lives, don't you? And then I think you finally settle into it.
Maybe. And how have the people around you reacted? So your family, are they, you know, you? I don't know how much of it's true, the stuff I've heard you talking about your families and their different problems.
I think they feel positive because I don't think I say anything mean. You know, it's not coming from a mean-spirited place.
Yeah.
You know, like saying my mum looks like Iggy Pop does now is quite a compliment. You know, and also we've all got a sense of humour, so I do think that helps, you know.
Yeah.
I think you do get that humour when you've had that kind of background together, you know.
Yeah. It's all very interesting stuff. What's Rylan like in real life? Is he nice?
It's lovely. His teeth, you can see your own reflection
big.
In.
They're big.
So, yeah. He seems nice, though.
Yeah. He's lucky, isn't he? So, and you've just started a Radio 4 show that's about to go out this week by the time this is out. Might have all been out. What, is it like a four-part or a six-part?
Four-part.
Four parts, and what's it about?
It's called Sophie Willan's Guide to Normality. So it's a look at what is kind of normal expectations, and each episode is an instruction that we might be given.
Okay.
You know, like be a parent, get a job, be polite, do monogamy. And each one of them is a look at that and maybe kind of slightly challenging of that.
Okay. So what about monogamy? What are you challenging in monogamy? Because monogamy is great, and I won't have a word said against. It's nothing better than being in a monogamous relationship.
But I just say maybe there's other options, you know. And then I say, you know, I wouldn't say I'm promiscuous, but I'm more of an anthropologist, you know. So I just look at being maybe more creative with the restrictions of monogamy, and especially, you know, being a woman who's turned 30, there's expectations that you need to settle down and have a baby and buy a house and, you know, do all that.
Yeah. So is that not something that interests you? Are you settling down, or is it?
Well, I've just left a relationship.
Have you?
So, 5 years. And then I came to London, chopped my hair off and dyed it ginger. So it's been quite a year, actually. So that's probably why that episode happened.
Yeah,
I do say at the beginning, you know, just disclaimers, just so you know, I'm quite raw from a breakup. So
it's a tainted episode. So you're working through your relationship breakup through comedy.
That's true.
Which
actually
is what I did all through my 30s before going, oh, fuck it, I'll be monogamous then. You've ground me down with your love. With your amazing love. Your dad isn't Richard Ashcroft of the Verve. Neither's mine. We've got that in common.
God, yeah.
Why did you think he was your dad? Or did you think
he was? Because my grandma told me that he was. Right. So it's not a great start, is it? And she'd heard from my mum, who had drug-induced psychosis at the time, but we didn't question it. And they look very similar. And they're both from Wigan. And they're both quite tall and thin.
Yeah.
And my dad is the same age as Richard Ashcroft. Mm-hmm. And they went off the same year to go cold turkey and become rock stars.
Okay.
So obviously, you know, in 1997, when that song came out, the drugs don't work, they just make you worse, but I know I'll see your face again. We thought, that's him, isn't it? And he's speaking to me personally. So, I know. So I started writing letters to Richard Ashcroft.
Oh, wow.
For quite a while. Yeah.
And did he write back?
No, he did not. He nearly...
Because, hello, I'm your secret daughter.
And can you imagine? Yeah. And also because there's lots of men that look like him around Bolton and Wigan. And there's loads of kids without dads. So he's probably getting a real influx of letters. Terrifying.
And some of them will be his kids, probably.
Yeah, yeah. Probably.
Just the law of averages. I'm sure they aren't. I don't know why I said such a thing. But if Richard Ashcroft of the Verve is listening... The drugs don't work, though, mate. Well done. That was correct. I'll give you that. cool. I'll try a random emergency question. There was one I wanted to... there's one I wanted to ask you. Let's see if it pops up. It might not. It hasn't. What is your favourite bun that is named after a place?
These are fucking surreal, aren't they?
Yeah, they are. That's the point.
Yeah, no, bun.
This is the fourth best comedy book.
What bun? What is
bun.
I'm just trying to think of buns.
Bath bun.
Shh, no, bun, right,
Chelsea bun.
All right, don't steal all the buns. I'll have none left.
What buns
kind
are
of
they
bun is there? Where's hot cross bun?
Yeah, that's not named after a place. Well, I mean, I suppose it is named after a very specific
Big,
place.
Named
after the cross of Jesus.
Yeah, thank you.
On the hill
what
of
are the buns
Golgotha.
Are?
Is that right? I don't know. I'm interested in finding. My favourite one's the Chelsea bun.
Right. Okay. Yeah, that's lovely.
What buns do they eat in Bolton?
You are?
What's the Bolton bun?
Think they have a bun. They've got...
Come on, they must have buns in
Bolton. They've got balm cakes.
Okay.
Yeah. Is this someone from Bolton?
Eccles.
Oh, yeah, Eccles you've got Eccles cakes. Yeah, there's lots of cakes, but I don't know about buns.
Chorley cake?
Yep. Batewell tart, Manchester tart.
Pontefract cakes.
Fabulous, yeah.
They're just bits of licorice, though, right?
Who
remembers Pontefract cakes?
My grandma loves them.
My granddad used to have them.
She used to throw them out on the roof. I used to think they were 2p coins.
Why did she throw them out on the roof?
If she didn't like them.
why didn't she learn that she didn't like them?
No. If it was a sunny day, you'd just think they were 2p.
I think we might have got onto something, the most interesting thing in that. Why did you think some bits of licorice were 2p?
The way the sun shimmered on them. They looked lovely. Yeah.
Write a play about that. That's what I'm going to do. If you had to marry a piece of furniture, if you had to, which piece of furniture would you wed?
A fire. I love fires. I love fires. Like open fires. Yeah.
I'd never looked
that.
In the embers of one.
No. I'd do that. Yeah.
They are nice. I've got an open fire in my house. It's my
beautiful.
Yeah,
it's
amazing.
She's showing off now.
I am showing off, but it's very nice. And I fuck it all the time. It really burns your knob, though. Got to be careful. Got to use some kind of prophylactic. I use asbestos. Who is this guy? This is a good question. I don't think I've asked this one before, and I think the other person to answer this question, they're not all childish, Sophia. I don't know what you're thinking. I'm a childish person. If you could choose which liquid you weed, you can have any liquid, what liquid would you wee?
Gold. Wouldn't you liquid gold?
A liquid gold.
Wouldn't
that be very hot, though? I mean, a liquid gold is... It's going to be
hot, but you'd be fucking loaded, wouldn't you? It'd be all right, wouldn't it?
Your urethra, though. You think of your poor urethra.
what liquid would be ideal to come out of your urethra?
Not if it's boiling up. Gold's melting point is...
Yeah.
500 degrees Celsius. All right, yeah, that guy says that's right. That's good. What would you... How would you market your gold wee? So would you want to buy Sophie Willan's golden wee? So
organically produced on site.
Yeah.
I can give you a golden shower.
Oh!
It's disgusting, wasn't it? Sorry about that.
And kill you. That could kill you like Goldfinger. I mean, it's a different version of Goldfinger, isn't it? But there we go. Yeah,
that's a campaign number two.
Okay. Why did Itsu in Notting Hill change from a sit-down sushi restaurant with all the stuff going round on a conveyor belt to just selling stuff out of fridges?
What was the...
Why did Itsu, it's a sushi restaurant
in
Notting Hill, me and my wife used to go a lot when we lived in West London, it changed from a sit-down sushi restaurant where there was a conveyor belt going round to just one where you get stuff out of fridges and take them to your workplace. Why did that happen?
Maybe because just people got a bit depressed and didn't have time to sit around the conveyor
I don't want
belt.
Speculation, I want the actual answer why they made this.
Because everyone's on the go now, and it's too...
Yeah, but it was nice to sit, you know, it came round, didn't it?
Yeah. I thought we... Yeah, okay.
Yeah, maybe you weren't the right
person.
Maybe
somebody sat on the conveyor belt.
They may have done. I went to... When I was in Melbourne, I went to one where it's on a train. Sushi came on a train. It was called Sushi Train.
On a little...
Yeah, like came around on a thing. Have you been to Australia? Have you played Australia?
No, but I'm doing that next week.
Yeah, I knew you were going out. So you're looking forward... Were you playing the Melbourne Festival?
Yes.
Ooh, it's really lovely. Have you ever been to Australia at all?
I've not, no.
Ooh.
Yeah,
it's much nicer than England.
Is it?
Yeah, and it's hot out there now.
Yeah, really someone said it's autumn, but I think they were joking.
Yeah, but it's probably coming into... They've had summer, but it's still ridiculously
still
hot.
Still lovely.
And the food's really nice. I haven't been for about 15 years. It might have changed. There's a lot of racists there.
Yeah, I've heard this.
Just in Australia, generally. If you get a chance, go and go around into the centre, though. You're going to have a holiday there when you after.
I've only there for the month, which is the festival, but you get Mondays off, so.
Yeah, you haven't got time to go into the centre of Australia on Monday.
Do you not?
No.
Oh, that's a shame.
Takes a couple of days. We drove.
Where's the centre then? Is that Sydney?
Well, no, there's not really anything.
It's all right, Mr. Geographer. Yeah.
Don't you know about the geography of Australia? It's all around the edge in Australia. They waste a lot of space in Australia. There's a lot in the middle they don't really do anything with.
Right, okay.
And everyone's around the edge because they like surfing, I think. I think that's the reason.
I've got brothers and sisters there, actually.
Have you?
I've not met them, but they're there.
Oh, cool.
So I might try and do that or just... invite them to the show, maybe. But they're younger than me.
It's a very interesting country, and it's beautiful. And then, then you've got the Uluru in the middle. Is in the middle of the country.
Yes,
you can fly out there. He calls it Ayers Rock, mate. That's how stupid that guy is. There's a big rock in the middle. But I drove there with Phil Granchi from Modern Problems in Science in 1997. You get an aspect on. A, how racist the country is, and B, and what a bad time the Aboriginal people of Australia have, this amazing kind of... There's nothing, and then there's this big red rock in the middle.
Right.
If you get a chance to go...
Yeah, we'll have a look, yeah.
Yeah, fly out.
Yeah.
Fly out in a helicopter for the day.
Yes, on a Monday.
And so what else is planned? Are you writing a new show for Edinburgh?
No, I'm not going to do a show this year. Okay. And then have a year off and then go back the next year.
A good call.
Yeah, I think you've got to have something to say again, don't you? Or something to write or an interest. I'm not.
I've managed to just keep on going back with nothing to say, but I think it's the right idea. I'm not doing it this year either.
Yeah, that's good. No. What are you up to then?
I'm just going to take some time off. It's tiring doing this, having comedy and doing it. Imagine having kids as well. It's
Yeah, it does sound exhausting.
Idiots.
Could you give them back? What could you do with them?
So stupid. You're not allowed. You're not allowed to put them in the wood burner. It's just, you know, what can you do with them? So I thought I'd hang around with them for a bit.
Yeah, that's nice.
Instead of going to Edinburgh. Though Edinburgh's quite nice because you can hang. If you did have kids, don't have kids. But if you did have kids, I mean, it's your choice. I understand. Unless, you know, the Conservatives get a bit more power and then it's not... your choice anymore. Unless Margaret Atwood's vision of the future comes true, in which case, I'll shut up.
It's a good place to go to with kids because you get to hang around with them in the day. When you're touring, you don't get to see your family.
That's in Melbourne.
Well, Melbourne or anywhere that you stay in one place. Melbourne's a really great festival. I'm sure you'll have a fantastic time out there because it's nice to come as a, you know, someone with some impetus behind
with
you
and
some
doing.
Yeah. Which room are you playing? Do you know what the room is?
I've no idea. I've not had a look, but I'm excited. I think it'd be good. You know.
You'll have a lot of fun.
Yeah.
You'll have a lot of fun out there. So, who would win in a fight, King Kong or King Dong? Do you know who King Dong is?
No.
You're so young.
Who is King Dong?
King Dong was someone who was supposed to have a 22-inch penis. I don't think it was real. Supposedly when he got an erection, he fainted because of the loss of...
Well, he wouldn't win in a fight.
The loss of blood. Well, he could use his flaccid penis to hit... I don't think anyone would beat King Kong, really. It's a stupid question.
A flaccid penis would be quite powerful at that size, wouldn't it?
Yeah. You've got 22 inches. Yeah. You can get it up to King Kong's level. You'd have to kind of get him to pick you up somehow. Then I think King Kong would just... It would enrage him. It would make him more annoyed. Yeah. It's a stupid question in many ways, Sophie. Why can't we live forever?
It would be quite boring, wouldn't it?
It would be boring.
Yeah.
It would be awful. You would do everything.
And then what?
And then it would still... I think the worst thing about living forever was just, you know, even if you've done everything, you're having quite a nice time, it's just knowing it's never going to stop. That's why I don't understand why people want to go to heaven, because it's like then it's just eternity. And
but then maybe there's another bit after that. And then
but then it keeps going. Maybe. We get to heaven, they go, this isn't it yet. I quite like that idea of the afterlife, you're not getting any answers, because everyone thinks the afterlife gives you lots of answers, but it's good to get there and go,
we don't
know what's going on.
That's what it's like when you go to a BBC meeting, isn't it? You get excited and they go, we don't fucking know.
You do. So you've got this book. We're going to talk about your book. Is this The Tales of the Weird, the Wild and the Wonderful?
Oh, yeah. I wrote that. That was a children's book. Okay. I wrote that with a group of Kerr leavers last year.
Cool.
So we all... that was part of the Stories of Kerr project. So we kind of wrote children's fiction. All the kids in the book, all the fictional characters, have had some Kerr experience themselves or not had normal family backgrounds. And then they're available to buy online, and we give out thousands of copies to kids in Kerr now. So, yeah, that's that book. So it's still available on Amazon. Yeah, you can buy it for $5.99, or if you're a cheapskate, you can download it for free on your Kindle.
Oh.
Yeah.
Well, I think we're going to go from strength to strength. I'm very excited to see what you are doing next. And thank you very much for coming in. We give a massive round of applause, Sophie Willem! Al Murray and Desiree Birch. How'd you like them sky potatoes?
Need new glasses or want a fresh new style? Warby Parker has you covered. Glasses start at just $95, including anti-reflective, scratch-resistant prescription lenses that block 100% of UV rays. Every frame's designed in-house with a huge selection of styles for every face shape. And with Warby Parker's free home try-on program, you can order 5 pairs to try at home for free. Shipping is free both ways, too. Go to warbyparker.com/covered to try 5 pairs of frames at home for free. warbyparker.com/covered.
Imagine the softest sheets you've ever felt. Now imagine them getting even softer over time. That's what you'll feel with Boll & Branch's organic cotton sheets. In a recent customer survey, 96% replied that Boll & Branch sheets get softer with every wash. Start getting your best night's sleep in these sheets that get softer and softer for years to come. Try their sheets with a 30-night guarantee. Plus, get 15% off your first order at bollandbranch.com. Code BUTTERY. Exclusions apply. See site for details.
Hey, it's Paige DeSorbo from Giggly Squad. High quality fashion without the price tag. Say hello to Quince. I'm snagging high-end essentials like cozy cashmere sweaters, sleek leather jackets, fine jewelry, and so much more. With Quince being 50 to 80% less than similar brands. And they partner with factories that prioritize safe, ethical, and responsible manufacturing. I love that. Luxury quality within reach. Go to quince.com/style to get free shipping and 365-day returns on your next order. quince.com/style.
Thanks again for listening to the podcast. richardherring.com/ballback/tour or richardherring.com/gigs for all of the information on the tour. GoFasterStripe.com for lots of downloads and books and lots of fun. Thanks for listening. Go and listen to another one. Tell your friends about the show. Tell your friends about the tour. I love you all. I'm out.